Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. Hey, y'all, Scott here. On average, how much do you think these interviews are worth to you? Of course, I've never charged for my archives in a dozen years of doing this, and I'm not about to start. But at patreon.com/ScottHortonShow, you can name your own price to help support and make sure there's still new interviews to give away. So what do you think? 2 bits? A buck and a half? There are usually about 80 interviews per month, I guess, so take that into account. You can also cap the amount you'd be willing to spend in case things get out of hand around here. That's patreon.com/ScottHortonShow. And thanks, y'all. All right, you guys, I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Check out the archives at scotthorton.org, 4,500-something, almost. Anyway, right around there. scotthorton.org, libertarianinstitute.org, and twitter.com/scotthortonshow. All right, on the line, I've got our good friend Dan McAdams. He, for years and years, was Ron Paul's foreign policy advisor in his congressional office. And now he runs the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity at ronpaulinstitute.org. And he co-hosts the Liberty Report daily with Ron Paul on their YouTube channel and at the Ron Paul Liberty Report website, which you can find at ronpaullibertyreport.com. It's a really great show, almost always foreign policy stuff, and both of them real experts. Welcome back. How are you doing, Dan?
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me back.
Very happy to talk with you again. And sorry, I'm asking you again to do me a favor and pick up the slack for me. I've been sick. Down with the pox. Luckily, not the smallpox, just the chicken pox. But I'm all right. So I'm back, but I missed everything that happened. I wasn't even reading. I was just watching old skate videos and stuff and sleeping. So I need to catch up. The Islamic State attacked Iran. What happened? When? What is the deal?
Well, that was back on the 7th, I believe, and it was a twin attack. It was one at the shrine to the Ayatollah Khomeini and the other inside the inside the Iranian parliament. It was the first time ISIS took credit for it right away, and it's apparently the first time that ISIS has hit Iran inside Iranian territory. So that marks kind of a departure in a way. For Iran to be a victim, and it's obviously been very active fighting ISIS in Syria, regardless of what Washington might claim. And the proof is in the pudding. Now they're getting hit because of it. So, not all American lawmakers thought it was a bad thing, but certainly many of them decried the loss of life there.
Yeah. Well, talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, well,
there was a discrepancy. Wait, what do you mean not all? Wait, huh?
Yes, I know. I was going to write about it, but it's getting a little old. But, you know, over the weekend, Dana Rohrabacher, who can be very good on some things and take courageous stands, nevertheless has, in my view, rather a blind spot when it comes to the Middle East and other things. And certainly when it comes to non-interventionism as a philosophy. But he was in a hearing over the weekend. I think it was on anti-war, picked it up too, where he said, well, hang on a minute. You know, ISIS was attacking the mullahs in Iran. How is that a bad thing? So essentially, praising terrorist attacks on Iran. And I think there were Iranian civilians that were injured or killed as well. So a pretty goofy thing to say. Maybe he hadn't had his energy drinks that morning, but still talk about foot in the mouth. I mean, hopefully we're still at a point where not so insane as a country when it comes to Iran. Hopefully there are still some people that say, hang on a minute, that does not sound right.
You know what, though? Help me, Dan, because, you know, I don't know. I'm a very contrary person, but I try to be contrary to myself, too, and I try to be devil's advocate as best I can. I try to be as accusatory against Iran as they deserve, as best I can. Maybe I'm overlooking something, but it seems to me that their great sin in the 21st century anyway is that they tricked Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz into tricking George W. Bush into overthrowing Saddam Hussein for them.
But that's all. So America's in no position to complain about that.
Yeah, I mean,
what else have they done? What am I missing that makes Iran such a big deal? I mean, hell, even to the Saudis, I guess I understand why the Sunni Iraqis hate them, but other than that, what's the big deal anyway?
Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing to hear the propaganda that they're the world's number one exporter of terrorism in the world. And all of these things, you know, they're sending troops to fight overseas. Okay, but the subtitle to that is they're fighting ISIS, which is supposed to be the enemy. You know, they're fighting in Syria. They don't attack the U.S. They don't attack our genuine interests anywhere. And as I'm hearing Ron Paul's voice in my ears, you know, they're not a perfect country. This is what he wrote in his column today. They're not a perfect country. But then again, who is? I mean, we're certainly fall far short from that of that mark. And the fact of the matter is, you know, let's look for a country. I don't think Americans really understand this, and I'm sure your listeners do because they're smart people. But, you know, this is a country that has the largest Jewish population outside of Israel in the Middle East. They had, you know, photos and videos of Christians celebrating Easter there. You know, try either of those two things in Saudi Arabia, our great ally. So for whatever faults it may have, and they also just had elections. Let's not forget that. So it's not to say that that any of us would love to live in a sort of essentially a theocracy. Right. However, when you say compared to what, right, then I think that's where it gets a little bit more subtle.
Well, as you said, the attack was on their parliament. Their what? Their supreme leader's house? No, their parliament. Yeah, as in they got one. As in, you know, for all the hype about what a terrorist dictatorship the place is. Yeah, you know, it's not a temporary limited constitutional republic like us, but then again, neither is the U.S.
Oh. Neither is us. Yeah. And they'd say, well, you know, the candidates have to be approved by the religious council, et cetera, et cetera. OK, that's probably not ideal. But don't we have a similar thing here? How well do third parties do? How well does any party do that challenges the
delegates and the rest of it? Sure. The whole thing.
Yeah. I mean,
every
if anyone
like that.
Just Google Ron Paul 2012 and see what happens to you if you run for office. You know, both parties conspire to deprive you of votes that you even got. So we've got a long way to go ourselves when it comes to a real multi-party democracy.
Yeah. But now, okay, so what about them throwing their weight around in the Middle East? I mean, if you ask the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, they'll tell you it's the rise of the new Persian Empire. Dan McAdams has got it all upside down. The mullahs are the center of evil. They're the great Satan, and we've got to do something about it. I mean, what's the truth of that? There's got to be something there.
Well, you know, I think the rule has got to be if anyone cites a Washington think tank or even, you know, one close to that, you've got to look at the donor list. You got to see who's giving them money because you pay and you play. And that's how it works in Washington. You look for the Institute for the Study of War, for example, the Atlantic Council, a Foundation for Defense of Democracies. When they're not paid by the military-industrial complex, they have big special interest donors. So, you know, I take everything they say with a grain of salt. But the fact of the matter is, after the P5 plus one agreement, things have gone well. They've checked out every time. They want to do business. They want to buy a bunch of Boeings, 737s. As President Trump or Candidate Trump might say, what's so bad about that?
Right. You know? I'm with you. I don't know what to say. I'm trying to come up with my best argument. And, you know, I have heard from someone, it's a single source, but someone I consider to be a reliable source, that it apparently is now true that the Iranians seem to be providing some arms to the Houthis. But even if that's right, and it's not really reliable, like I said, it's a single source. But even if that is right, that's still only 2 years into the war that America and Saudi started against the Houthis on a completely trumped up pretext that they were a front for Iranian power there. So,
and isn't it rich for the world's number one arms exporter to be saying, oh, how dare you? You know, even though if the Houthis lose, an incredibly hostile force will be that much closer to you. How dare you get involved? You should just do what we say and, you know, don't look out for your own interests. I mean, nobody else in the world is allowed to have interests that conflict with ours. You know, it's just incredible.
Yeah. Well, or even the American people. Like, for example, what you're talking about is the Houthis are keeping a lid on Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula there. Now, our government may love those guys and want to fly as their Air Force, and I know they bomb them too, but they also fight for them. But if you ask the American people, hey, these are the only actual enemies of us on Earth, those who obey Zawahiri, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the propaganda is so confusing. I almost think it's designed that Americans simply don't know what to believe. If you ask any American, and I had a conversation a few days ago with someone who was, you know, not some dummy, let's put it that way, and they're still completely clueless. No, the Iranians, they sponsor terrorism everywhere. They're the number one sponsor of terrorism. Over and over again, you know, they don't have a grounding. And you probably saw this piece, Scott, but Steve Kinzer, who we both, I think, admire, had a great piece in the Boston Globe a couple of days ago about how Indonesia, the largest Muslim country on earth, mm-hmm. but a very, very moderate form of Islam, all of a sudden the Saudis are going over there spending tons of money exporting Wahhabism over there, and the place is getting very radicalized. They kicked out, not only did they kick out the mayor of Jakarta, who was a Christian, they actually threw him in jail for a generally very mild comment he made. So this is radicalism worldwide.
Yeah, well, and the narrative, see, that's what's interesting about Dan Rohrabacher, where we started this conversation here, is that here's a guy who knows enough about the world to know better. Not that he does. I mean, his judgment is often very flawed. I hear him say, you know, we got to get out of Afghanistan so that we can focus on allying with Russia against China, or just some off the wall kind of madness. It's always something. But at least, you know, we know that he can picture Eurasia in his head, and he knows the difference between Pakistan and Iran, as long as we're at it, compared to other members of the House of Representatives. That's pretty advanced. And yet, he seems to be, well, you know, caught up in the sloganeering and the kind of ideological underpinning that, yes, Iran and Shiite power is always nemesis, despite all evidence, despite all the history of not just, you know, the Afghan and Iraq wars, but the Obama years and the wars in Libya and Syria. Rohrabacher knows enough to be able to see, you know, as David Stockman says it, he's not a purist non-interventionist. I guess sometimes David Stockman says, hey, if anything, we should be allying with the Shiites to destroy the Islamic State and the al-Nusra Front and these terrorist groups. I mean, I would never say that, but at least you can see he's got his head screwed on straight as to who's who and who's on whose side. It seems like Rohrabacher, I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what explains it, because it does seem to be the, I guess what I'm trying to say, seems to be the triumph of ideology or just, you know, repetitious sloganeering over common sense.
He does have a lot of knowledge. I mean, we've all seen the pictures of him over there in his Mujahideen garb,
right?
You know, so he's been on the ground. I mean, I think in his case, this might not sound very kind, but a little knowledge is not necessarily a thing. Well, you're not well grounded in a philosophy, and I don't think he's grounded in philosophy. I think he loves the idea of geopolitics, grand strategy, and all these things, which I can't stand. I think it's all horrible. But so without being grounded in a real philosophy and knowing a little bit about these places, he sees the world as a chessboard, and I think that's such a dangerous thing.
Yeah. All right, so let's shift gears a little bit. As you say, the Iranians, they're at war against the Islamic State and the al-Nusra Front in Iraq and in Syria. And America, again, is on multiple sides of this conflict, you know, more than we can count. Not more than we can count, but at least, you know, a few. You have to stop to count them, And this includes now, in the Trump years, not Barack Obama, in the Trump years, three different sets of strikes on Syrian government targets. Is that correct?
Yeah, at least three, absolutely. And that's coming just in the last couple of months. And as a matter of fact, last week there were two. And it is certainly a departure. You know, the U.S. sets up its own base there inside Syrian territory. It declares a deconfliction zone. And then it says, this is a well-established deconfliction zone. And the Russians and Iranians, everyone says, really? By whom? Because we'd never heard of it before. And so here you have militias in hot pursuit of ISIS, and the U.S. takes them out.
you know, on route. And then you have Defense Secretary Mattis saying, well, these are Iran-directed troops, militias. And so he uses that to make it sound ominous.
Well, let me stop you just to nail it down for certain here. These troops, whether they're, you know, some combination of Iranian, Syrian, and Hezbollah and whatever Iranian-backed forces, I'd buy that for the sake of argument anyway. The point I want to get to is it's certain that they're engaged in battles with the Islamic State, not necessarily these or those so-called moderates or Nusra or anybody else. They're in the middle of a fight with the Islamic State, and America hits them?
Yes, that's exactly what happened. And so they're militias. They're close to they're Shia militias. They're not the Syrian Arab Army, but they're certainly de facto fighting the Syrian Arab Army's fight, and they're invited, mm-hmm. and they're attacking the people that we say are the enemies. But the U.S. says, you're coming too close to our guys here that we're training. Yeah, training yet another group of rebels who they've been basically holding hands with for a couple of years because these guys have not been able to prove themselves on the battlefield. This is not the force that's going to take Raqqa. That's a fact. So I think facts on the ground are determining things faster than the U.S. can react. And actually, you may have seen this, but today the commander of the Al-Quds force made a surprise visit to the Iraq-Syrian border to meet with his militias and his people that are fighting.
Well, so is it a problem then for the Americans that the so-called SDF, Syrian Defense Forces, which I understand is almost all Kurds and that the Arab yeah. fighter part of it is sort of a marginal thing, but is it the problem is that they don't really want to march on Raqqa because they don't want to try to take it and hold it, and so why die trying?
I think the U.S. Has pushed Turkey into this camp. They certainly don't want the SDF to control Raqqa. So what is the U.S. going to do with it if they do take it? And that's a big if. So I can't imagine the Kurds are dummies. They're not going to sit here thinking, okay, let me get this straight. We're going to go fight and bleed and die to take this city, and then the U.S. is going to tell us to go home. That doesn't make much sense.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like the people of Raqqa probably wouldn't be able to control that city anyway, and it doesn't seem like they are really motivated to do that, to try to expand. They're trying to desperately hold on to the autonomy they've got, and of course they've made a deal with the devil in making this bargain with the Americans, which of course they had to do to protect themselves from ISIS, which, was a consequence of American intervention in the first place. But yeah, it seems like even if the Americans wanted them to try to take Raqqa and hold it, that they still wouldn't be able to, and they still would be up against the very same force that ISIS is up against now to their south and east, which would be the Shiite alliance, basically, of the Iraqi militias, the Iraqi army, the Quds force, as you say, and whatever groups of Hezbollah fighters and whatever backing the Syrian government as well, right?
Yeah, and I think that's
the force that's going to end up taking Raqqa.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org.
Yeah, I mean, it appears that way. And I mean, I would think the last thing the U.S. military would want would be to have to take and hold Raqqa.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? I mean, this is like we're back in Iraq circa 2004. You know, that can't be what they want to see happening. So I don't think they know what they want, really. I think the idea of a partition is something they've long wanted, but I think the facts on the ground are making that at least seem less likely.
Mm-hmm. All right, so what's the point, though, of hitting Assad? Because it sounds like you're saying that at least it sure looks like a pretext that they were getting near the forces, the Southern Front forces, border guards that America's trained up there. But they were busy fighting the Islamic State at the time. Was it, were they really just trying to help the Islamic State?
No, I mean, I don't think directly. I think that was the indirect cause or the indirect effect of what the U.S. was doing. But, you know, maybe they're still clinging to the fantasy that these troops that they're training on the border will be successful. But, you know, this group that they're training on the border has made explicit that their goal is the overthrow of Assad mm-hmm. as well. So if you are, I mean, I guess, does that make him fair game? I guess it would. Certainly if the shoe was on the other foot yeah. and we were talking about a group inside the U.S. whose goal was the overthrow of the U.S. government, even if they also wanted to take on a different terrorist force, I can't see Washington looking very kindly at this group.
Yeah. But so, well, do you think that it's possible that whichever Shiite militia it was or whatever that they hit, that they actually were targeting these Southern Front forces, or that the Americans actually thought that that was a real possibility, or they just wanted to, you know, make a point or something?
Well, the word that the spokesman for the operation, what's it called, intensive force, whatever the U.S. operation is called there, is that this was a defensive move because they were, you know, the U.S. declared, I think it's a 50-kilometer buffer zone, and the U.S., strangely enough, views it as defensive even though they're in a country illegally and occupying space illegally in a country. It's you know, as I mentioned, I think the other day, it's like, you know, robber comes into your house, shoots you, and then claims self-defense.
Yeah. All right, so now let's talk about Libya here. A couple important stories about Libya. First of all, the Manchester bombing that took place in England, I guess, 2 weeks ago now. How many were killed in that thing? 20 or something?
I think it's up to 25 or something now.
Okay. This is a pop concert, young girls.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah. So who was this guy that killed them?
When London and Washington decided that the overthrow of Gaddafi was a good thing and the overthrow of Assad was a good thing, they were eager and chomping at the bit to go back to their home countries, or in some cases the countries their parents fled, and to fight for the overthrow. These are people whose parents had been dissidents. That Manchester bomber, his parents had been opposed to Gaddafi, and they left, I think, in the early 2000s, I think, if I'm not mistaken, maybe earlier than that. So the UK, having a policy of overthrowing these Gaddafi and Assad, they gave them the green light. And these guys went and they spent some time fighting in places like Libya alongside al-Qaeda. And then when it came time to come home, they gave them the green light to come home. They had to wait, you know, had to waive the regulations, et cetera, et cetera. And so they come home radicalized after fighting side by side. And in the case of the Manchester bomber, I don't know necessarily fought in Libya. He was in Benghazi when it was so-called liberated. He also was in Syria, may have gotten some training there. So this is called, you know, I mean, you know, sow the wind, reap the whirlwind. You know, this is foreign policy interventionism insanity in a nutshell.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm sorry, but told you so. And I mean, specifically you and me told them so. The archives are there. All you got to do is go to the Ron Paul Institute website. All you got to do is go to antiwar.com, go to scotthorton.org, look up, you know, spring and summer 2011. And there's us saying, well, geez, if we support a bunch of terrorists in overthrowing Gaddafi and turn the place into another Osama bin Ladenistan over there, only now in Northern Europe, why, someday these fighters and, geez, and we got all these European Muslims going back to fight in these jihads in Libya and in Syria, they're going to be coming home. I mean, this is us circa 2011, 2012, 2013. Gee whiz, Dan McAdams, this could lead to the rise of the Islamic State in eastern Syria. I know, Scott, wouldn't that be terrible? Cha-ching. Then it comes true. And then all these guys come home from fighting in Syria. They start attacking Brussels and attacking Paris, attacking in the UK. And they want to act surprised by any of this?
I mean, gee, we didn't see that coming.
Yeah, and Never Even Mind told you so in 2002 and 2003, right? But we're talking 2011, when we already saw Bush take Al-Qaeda from 400 men and grow it into 10,000. And we said, you guys want to take it from 10,000 and grow it to 50?
Yeah.
Why?
And the Home Secretary at the time was Theresa May, interestingly enough. And what is that same Theresa May, who's now prime minister, although only by a thread now, what is her response to this attack? Well, we got to crack down on the internet. That's really the real problem. You know, no, it's your policy, you fool.
I saw her even say they had a clip going around on Twitter where she said, if human rights laws are getting in the way of protecting us from terrorism, well, then we will change those human rights laws. Like, wow, Hillary Clinton, why don't you go ahead and just say it in the worst possible way you could frame it, you know?
Yeah, it's just incredible. And she wonders why she lost. But it's also the idea of, you know, cracking down on speech, more surveillance society, everything but looking at the foreign policy. That's the one thing they won't touch, either Washington or London or really any of our allies. So hopefully some of our allies on the continent are starting to get it. You know, it's certainly not wouldn't be a moment too soon.
Yeah, it's well. I don't know. I always want to characterize it, and I never can decide whether it's more crazy or more stupid or more just evil. But anyway, or more just frustrating.
Yeah, it's a mix. It's got to be.
All right, now this is going to sound like it's probably a little bit nuts. Hooray, Saif Gaddafi is out of prison?
Yeah, I mean, hooray. I mean, it's interesting. You know, he's... obviously, neither of us support anyone anywhere, including in our own country, who seeks power. But it is interesting that he'd been held for a while. I think technically he was just being detained. He had been in prison for a few years. But as of this weekend, he's apparently free. He's gone on to the eastern part of the country. He said he may get some medical care, but he intends to come back. He was, I think, the favored son of Muammar, but he's very westernized. I think he went to the London School of Economics, so we can forgive him for that. But here you have a someone who may emerge as an important figure. Apparently, that a lot of the tribes are in support of him as a figure who can bring the country together. It would be really the ultimate irony, though, wouldn't it, if all this happened for naught, and here comes Gaddafi's son to turn the place around.
Yeah, well, I mean, and the reason I said yay, kind of reserved sort of a yay there, again, as you say, huge disclaimer, nobody's supporting certainly any foreign faction. But in the scheme of things, this was the guy, right, in the groundbreaking Washington Times series by Kelly Riddell and Jeffrey Shapiro there, about how Dennis Kucinich, the congressman, and Robert Gates, the Secretary of Defense, and I don't know, would it have been Petraeus at the time at CIA? That they, maybe it wasn't Petraeus, in 2011, when they tried to short-circuit the war, when they tried to stop Hillary Clinton, and you had the DOD and the CIA and Kucinich doing an end run around the Secretary of State, the chief diplomat, trying to stop the war, and they were negotiating with Saif Gaddafi. And according to that Washington Times series, he was the one who, as you were saying, not just was Western educated, but he was very interested in, you know, inheriting the dictatorship there, and but also in his mind, at least, you know, modernizing and bringing Libya into the 21st century with, you know, not just economic, but with, you know, political reforms and expand democracy and elections and people power on this kind of thing, because he had vision enough to see that, you know, he didn't want to just sit on a golden throne or, you know, and be fanned or whatever. He wanted to do something with the private property, you know, that was the Libyan state. He wanted to curate it. And he was the one who was trying to short circuit the war. And I guess it is probably really lucky that he didn't die in the thing. I would have thought that he would have that this chance would have been completely spent now. But maybe this guy could forge a consensus and actually do some of that stuff. I don't know. His father has certainly maintained power because he had, you know, cut enough deals with enough factions to keep it, right? So,
yeah, and he also warned us, if you overthrow me, you're going to have a country overrun with terrorists. Oh, no, you're crazy. You just want to keep in power. Well, I'm sure he did want to keep in power, but he was also right when it came to that.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, maybe, you know, they do have some form of a parliament now, maybe a couple of them competing. But, you know, maybe he can make a bicameral legislature out of the damn thing and try to actually move forward. I mean, I'm not saying the guy's any kind of miracle worker or even a good person necessarily, but it sounds like at least he's interested in the future good of the society, not just himself, like Uday or Kusei or, you know, yeah, Donald Jr. or whoever, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think he probably learned at his father's knee how to balance the tribes and the different interests.
Well, and I guess who knows? The other thing, too, is there's probably no one else who possibly could. That's really the other choice, is chaos. So yeah, maybe this is, you know, a possible solution to chaos, I guess, is what I'm really floating here.
Yeah, I guess if it could be, he'll probably get whacked by the CIA or something before he gets a chance.
Sure, hope not. You know, somebody was telling me that the rumors were true, that the CIA has abandoned Haftar and really a long time ago, I guess, and that now he's cozying up to the Russians. So,
yeah, I've seen that, and he's also, I mean, as far as I understand, we ran a couple of pieces on it, but he's had some contacts with Saif as well. So Haftar and Saif may forge some kind of an agreement. That remains to be seen, but Haftar certainly on the ground is making some progress militarily lately. So who knows? We may finally see something happen there.
And then, so what of Abdul Hakim Belhaj and all the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group guys? They still are in control of the parliament in Tripoli?
Yeah, they are, you know, and I don't follow every in and out because, frankly, there are just too many factions. My main interest is what our policy should be and should have been.
Right.
But you know, there does appear to be some consolidation under Haftar, and he has proven himself fairly wily thus far. And I think the UN recognized government has not been benefiting from it. So, you know, I don't know what we'll see.
Well, and you know what? Probably half of this is somewhere hidden, is Qatar versus Saudi, right? And supporting different factions, the Turks, and a lot of different groups around there have interests. You know, you see sometimes those parody charts of alliances in the Middle East, and it's just all spaghetti and meatballs for fun because there's no way for an outsider to even tell, really.
Yeah, it's impossible. It's too complex. But we do know one thing: we need to stay out of it.
Yeah, I got that right. All right, listen. Thank you so much for your time on the show and helping clear up some of this stuff for us this week, Dan.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. All right, you guys. That is the great Dan McAdams. He's the co-host of the Ron Paul Liberty Report at ronpaullibertyreport.com. He runs the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity at ronpaulinstitute.org as well. And, you know, you can read Ron's weekly column there and a lot of other great stuff. So really definitely bookmark that. Check it out, ronpaulinstitute.org. I'm Scott Horton, full archives at scotthorton.org and at libertarianinstitute.org. And you can follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show. All right, thanks.
Hey, Al Scott here. If you've got a band, a business, a cause, or campaign, and you need stickers to help promote, check out thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. They digitally print with solvent ink, so you get the photo quality results of digital with the strength and durability of old-style screen printing. I'm sure glad I sold thebumpersticker.com to Rick back when. He's made a hell of a great company out of it, and there are thousands of satisfied customers who agree with me, too. Let thebumpersticker.com help you get the word out. That's thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com.